Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. The Mosaic Life Podcast is a podcast on happiness. My name is Trey Kaufman. The goal of the podcast is to explore happiness, what it means to us as individuals, and why so many of us chase it, and yet so few of us ever really find it. If you find value in this particular episode of the podcast, or you've found value in episodes previously, you can follow me on Instagram at Trey Kaufman. That's TreyKaufman. That is the best place aside from the website to find up-to-date podcast information and announcements. My guest today is someone whose work I've respected for a great long while, and someone who not only has tremendous influence in the world of podcasting, but he has also played a role in the growth of this particular podcast, both directly and indirectly. James Cridland is editor of Pod News, a daily podcast newsletter. He is a radio futurologist, a writer, consultant, and public speaker on radio's future. James has worked in radio and audio since 1989 as an award-winning copywriter, radio presenter, and internet strategist. He launched the world's first streaming radio smartphone app in March 2005 for the original Virgin Radio in London, launching daily podcasts earlier that year. James has been so kind in the past as to share the 100th episode milestone of the Mosaic Life podcast with his newsletter audience, and he has turned me on to resources and tools I wasn't previously aware of through his newsletter that have helped me better produce this podcast. His newsletter is top-notch, and if you're a podcaster interested in staying in the know, I would highly encourage you check it out. What I most admired about James throughout this conversation and through getting to know him, however, was his genuine kindness. In order to produce this episode, James and I worked through intercontinental time zones, a scheduling snafu, and halfway through this episode, the electricity in my home decided to shut off for a brief moment, leaving James hanging for a good 5 minutes while I scrambled to get back online. And the only reason I bring these things up is simply to point out that James is a consummate professional and one of the kindest human beings I've had the pleasure of speaking with. The only thing that outshines James' kindness and professionalism are his knowledge and love for all things audio, which is why I'm so excited to share this conversation. Please welcome my guest to the podcast, the wonderful James Cridland. James, thank you so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm really good. Yes, I'm really good.
Well, it's a pleasure to connect. It's not every day that I get to have a conversation with someone whose work I enjoy on a daily basis. So this is kind of a treat for me. So I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say.
To get started, I mean, I know you have a long history in radio, and that's kind of how I had my upbringing within college and then briefly afterward. I mean, what was your, I'm sure you've seen so much in the industry. What has your experience been as it's changed from analog, mixer boards to what we have now, and everything's just completely digital and we're having conversations across the entire planet?
Yes. I mean, imagine doing this 30 years ago. I mean, you could do it, but it would it would have meant lots of people and lots of conversations with telephone companies and all kinds of things, which is probably not such a good thing. It's been a tremendous change. So I started in radio right at the end of the vinyl era. So I was still playing vinyl records when I went on the air in the late 1980s. But, quite a few stations had already moved to the exciting, heady days of CDs.
Yes.
When I left radio, of course, we were using computers to play much of the music and jingles and all that kind of stuff. So, a big change. But I think also you know, a very big change in terms of how people consume radio. So, you know, radio, I think, you know, back in the day was listened to predominantly on FM and AM radios, and now it's listened to on a variety of different things. So that's been really interesting, you know, seeing that big difference in terms of how people are consuming audio. And of course, podcasting is part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's super interesting to me. So I was in college, and this is, I don't know if I want to say this. I was in college from 2004 to 2009. So doing the math, it was a good 5.5 years for a 4-year degree. So you can tell what kind of a student I was, but, we did have a terrestrial station on campus, but I think it was an NPR station. So it wasn't a student-run station. And then our student-run station was internet only. And I felt like at the time it was such a disadvantage because right around that time, I think podcasting was starting to grow legs, but we didn't necessarily know what the means of it were going to be or the tools that it could provide. And so I just felt like I fell into that time where we don't have the reach of terrestrial radio, but at the same time, we have a little bit more flexibility and freedom with the content we create. So it was definitely an interesting time for me. And it's been cool to kind of see that evolve now, you know, 12, 13 years later. I can, you know, we're having this conversation and we have the ability to spread it out across the entire planet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I think it's easy to run away with the idea that radio doesn't really exist anymore and that nobody listens anymore. Sure. And, you know, and that would be, you know, that would be wrong. So if you were to look at North America, for example, in the US, it's around 92% of people still listen to the radio at some point during the week. In Canada, it's a little bit less. But, and that's very different to podcasting, for example. Podcasting, 41% of people listen to a podcast a month, and they're certainly not listening for the same amount of time. So I think, quite a lot of people have been assuming that radio is dead and that, video killed the radio star, as the song goes, which drives me crazy. Because, you know, radio is still going. But I think what's exciting to me is that audio is increasing and the amount of audio that we listen to is certainly increasing, which is a lovely thing because that means that, you know, audio, not just, you know, AM, FM, but audio in all of its guises is still just as powerful, if not more powerful, than it's ever been.
Yeah, absolutely. And I so agree with you wholeheartedly. As a podcast host, I want to be able to, you know, stick my nose in the sand and say, yes, radio's dead, and, you know, listen to podcasts, this. But I know when I get in the car, it's not exactly difficult to pull up a podcast, and I shouldn't say this as a podcast host, but it's just so the barriers to entry, the barriers to get playing and entertained are so much lower when you get in the car and the radio just turns on, you hear a song that you like and you get swept into that playlist of the same 10 songs over and over again. And when you listen to a podcast, I mean, even if it's the most lighthearted comedy podcast, you still have to think, you still have to interpret what they're saying. So I understand why people still feel, I don't know if I want to call it a nostalgia for radio, but they still have a draw toward it.
Oh yeah. And there's definitely a habit part of that as well. And you know, I still wake up to the radio. I don't wake up to the radio on a radio. I wake up to it on a smart speaker, but I still wake up to the radio. And, you know, and I think that quite a lot of people do. So I suppose you've got that sort of side, but I would also say that, as a podcaster, we can either do one of two things. We can shout about how dreadful radio is these days and, and podcasting, yay, radio, boo.
Right.
Or we can recognize that actually it's all audio and there are more things to be fighting about than whether it's audio through a podcast or audio through radio. I remember going to the first podcast conference that I ever went to, which was in June of 2005. So this was a time before Apple had even put podcasts into the iPod. It was that early. And it was in London. And I was working for a radio station where I had put some daily podcasts live in January of that year. So very, very early on. And I remember going to the conference, giving up a weekend of mine to go to the conference in the center of London and talk about what we were doing to be shouted at. by people yeah. who were involved in podcasting, who felt that it was us versus them, yeah. and who felt that radio should be crushed, and that podcasting should be the only way. And you know, I'm not sure that that's a particularly helpful thing. And one of the yeah. things that I've been saying to the radio community, because I still consult to a lot of radio companies, one of the things that I say to them is, They in podcasting can learn an awful lot from radio, yes. but yeah. similarly, radio can learn an awful lot from podcasting. And Absolutely. The fact is that, you know, radio was much later in terms of understanding the opportunities that new technology had to give them. And, you know, the fact that we are having this conversation now across continents was something that, you know, radio really hasn't considered doing until very, very recently, using yeah. the sort of technology. And I keep on, you know, I had a conversation on a radio station a couple of weeks ago via Skype, and I was thinking, well, you know, I mean, at least that's a step forward to the previous conversation that I had, which was on the telephone. And I was thinking, how complicated must it be for you, a large public broadcaster somewhere in the world, to have yeah. understood how internet works and to understand yeah. that you can actually get better audio quality? So that was a real sort of wake-up call, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see... I shouldn't say this in a plural sense, but I mean, you look at iHeartRadio and iHeartMedia, yeah. and the extent of my professional radio career was with Clear Channel, and that was I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the predecessor to iHeart. Mm-hmm. And now you've got iHeart, and you can give me the statistic, but I mean, they are a major player in the podcast market. They provide a great deal of content when it comes to podcasting, and so it's that company that was able to consolidate all these smaller radio groups who are now able to tap into this newer technology and continue to monetize it.
Yeah, and they also bought an awful lot of podcast companies as well, you know, yeah. so that has certainly helped them. But yeah, I mean, they are number one in terms of in terms of creating podcasts. So in terms yeah. of making them, they're number one for the amount of listeners that they have according to Podtrac. Now, Podtrac only measures some people. So yeah. it's number one of all the people that Podtrac measure, which isn't necessarily the number one. I believe that the number one is still Joe Rogan, much yeah. though I would be very keen that that wasn't the case. Yeah. But I think, you can certainly see that traditional radio companies like iHeart, like Audacy, who used to be called Entercom, and, you know, and the BBC and the ABC here in Australia and so on and so forth, have really understood that this is just another form of radio, another yeah. form of audio, and therefore, you know, getting content out on those platforms is important. I think one of the things, though, that you can see in different podcast markets across the world is you can see that you can work out how developed the podcast market is by having a look at the top 10. And you have a look at the top 10 in Korea, for example, and the top mm-hmm. 10 or in Singapore. And the top 10 is mostly reheated radio shows. So it's a radio show which has been on the air, which has then been packaged up and thrown out as a podcast. Whereas once you look at the more developed markets, whether that's Australia, whether that's the UK, whether that's the US or Canada, you can see that there is much more bespoke content there. Yeah. There's much less reheated radio. And there's, you know, reheated radio does work and works quite well, but actually you can do so much more with a podcast. And podcasting isn't broadcasting. You know, right. the benefit of broadcasting is that you reach loads of people all of the time. But the problem about broadcasting is that you have to reach loads of people. You can't put a radio show together about, you know, underwater knitting in Mongolia because the five people that want to have a listen to that aren't necessarily yeah. going to be, you know, that's not necessarily the best way of using an FM, you know, transmitter. So, yeah, so there's a big difference there, I think. And I think, you know, the clever podcasters are understanding that the job isn't to produce something which is incredibly mass market. The job is to really focus on a niche, focus on a particular audience and super serve that audience.
Yeah, it's a super interesting point. And I guess I came to this podcast. This will be my second podcast, and this is my longest running podcast. And I created this podcast knowing that I wanted to create it for me. I knew the type of content that helped improve my life. I knew the type of content and the podcast that helped propel me forward in my entrepreneurial journey. And I wanted to, in a way, give back to in the same type of manner that those podcasts gave to me. And so I created this podcast with an audience of one, and I helped it grow from there. And so when it comes to creating your content and doing it in a way that feels good for you, but also doing it in a way that is successful and you're creating that niche, I mean, how important has it been, as far as you've seen, for hosts to create for themselves versus to, again, create from a mass market like you see in radio when you're broadcasting to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people?
I mean, I think if you are thinking about this from the point of view of, for example, an advertiser, would you rather reach, if you were a Harley Davidson, would you rather reach everyone under the sun, or would you rather reach people who really like motorbikes and are considering upgrading to a Harley Davidson? You know, I mean, it's that sort of, or downgrading. I don't understand motorbikes. Don't at me. You know, I think that is the important thing. And I think that quite a lot of media buyers, quite a lot of advertising agencies are beginning to understand that it isn't just the overall numbers that matter. It's more than that. It's the fact that you actually have specific communities that you want to end up reaching, and it's important to end up reaching those. And the same thing goes for podcasts. That if you're running a podcast and maybe you are, you know, maybe your podcast is focused about real estate, then it's important, you know, obviously to reach those people and people who aren't interested in real estate, who aren't interested in investment, who aren't interested in you know, all of those other things. Well, that's fine. You're not reaching those. And I think it's a change of thinking to stop looking at just the raw download numbers. And to start looking at, well, how many people in this market am I actually reaching? How big is the market anyway? And what can I do in terms of that?
Yeah, that's a good viewpoint, a good perspective. And so you obviously have very strong, or maybe not very strong, you have opinions about this man. And I would like to dig into those a little bit. You mentioned Joe Rogan, and he's been doing it from as far as I can tell, the beginning. And he's become very successful. We can just say that. And advertisers have obviously, you know, flung themselves at him, and he attracted Spotify, which there's plenty of controversy around that within itself. But I mean, what do you think has made Joe the hit success that he is when there have been other people similar to him doing it for almost as long and, you know, creating high quality content as well? What do you think it is about Joe Rogan that's caused him this mass popularity?
Oh, I think it's a good mix. I mean, I think it's a mix of, firstly, he has stuck at it for an awfully long time, as you so rightly say. And I think quite a lot of people getting into podcasting now, you know, get into podcasting and after 6 weeks go, oh, well, my podcast isn't getting very many, you know, people getting there, you know, keep on going. Dave Jackson, who's a great podcast consultant, he says that you have to stick at it for basically 3 years. And after 3 years, you'll know whether or not you're any good. And I think that that's a totally valid point of view. So I think that there's that, which is one side. I think another side is that he is a very controversial person. He says ludicrous things sometimes. and that's not necessarily always a good thing, but nevertheless, always guarantees him press. He was a well-known person before he got into podcasting, which also helps. And I think the use that he has made of video, the use that he's made of YouTube, has enabled him to reach different audiences than would, you know, just reach an audio-only podcast. So I think he's done a lot of interesting things. I think, by the way, that he's done an awful lot of things wrong. one of the things that it really amazes me is you have a look at the Joe Rogan Experience, his podcast, which is still on places like Apple Podcasts and Pocket Casts and Overcast and everything else, yeah. with an old with an old episode from about a year and a half ago. And what they haven't done is they haven't put clips in there of his current shows yeah. and said, you know, you can still get this show on Spotify and all of that stuff. It's just, you know, they're still paying for it, but they've yeah. just basically frozen that feed in time. And that seems to me to be such a mistake. Why would you do that? Yeah. So I think that, you know, that there's various things that you can learn, you know, from this. But, you know, as I say, I think, you know, he has done a very good job of understanding what the medium is all about and, you know, and doing a good job around it.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point that I had not thought of before. I mean, I generally use Pocket Casts almost exclusively for my podcast, unless I do happen to want to catch an episode of Joe. But yeah, I mean, his little smug face is right there on my podcast feed. Yes. And you're absolutely right. I mean, all of the prior episodes are still there. But you bring up a very good point and something that, you know, coming from radio, I imagine you have an opinion or a good amount of feedback or interesting information on is Joe, like you said, he does say a lot of ludicrous things and he will admit it himself. He's very rarely right. But when it comes to the medium and when it comes to, for lack of a better way of saying it, a lack of regulation and freedom of speech, and especially since you and I are in different countries, I'm curious to hear your viewpoint. I mean, how far do you push that envelope? I mean, we've seen so much trouble brewing on Facebook alone over the last 4 or 5 years in this country. And so I'm curious, when you have a platform like Joe's, I mean, and I know Spotify employees have issue with it. This is major news, but when he says things that can be dangerous, I mean, do you ever draw the line?
Yeah, and I think you put your finger on it when you say that that we're from different countries, and so yeah. therefore there is a very different belief in the US around freedom of speech, and yeah. you know, and it's enshrined in the Constitution and everything else. Right. I think once you leave the US and you look around at other countries, then what most of us have is we have the concept of freedom of speech, but we also have the concept of being a good human being
yeah.
and making sure that what people say isn't harmful to other people and everything else. And yeah. I think there's an interesting sort of mix. Weirdly, American radio is quite highly regulated in terms of some of the things that you can and can't say.
Right.
So is British radio, so is Irish radio. Once you have a look into Australian radio, I've never heard anything more astonishing in my life. Being a Brit, as you can tell, and moving here 5 or 6 years ago, gosh, you know, it's a different world. But, you know, so I think, you know, most people understand that regulation is there for good reasons yeah. quite a lot of the time. And it isn't necessarily just, you know, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech doesn't allow you to, it doesn't give you freedom to offend.
Right.
You know, and that possibly isn't what you should be aiming for.
Right.
So I think that there is a different conversation there. And it's one of those awkward conversations because you end up with, you know, Adam Curry launched the Podcast Index, which is a free, open to everybody directory of podcasts that any podcast app can use or any journalist can use or whatever. And it includes everybody. And it includes, you know, obviously it would include Joe Rogan if he was a freely available podcast, but it also includes, you know, Steve Bannon and Alex Jones and all of those kinds of yeah. people who yeah. have been taken off various other platforms. And, you know, and from Adam's point of view, it's a key tenant of the Podcast Index that it is open and free and censor-free and anybody can be in there. And I think it's not necessarily appreciated that that is actually a turnoff for quite a few people who don't want that kind of content, who do want a trusted guide to just make sure that they're not going to hear, you know, Holocaust denial or, you know, anti-vax stuff, which is harmful to a vast amount of people. You know, they're actually going to hear some, you know, at least some thought has gone into the content which is available on this particular platform. And so I think, you know, that's a difficulty, but I do appreciate that it gets very, very much into the American belief of freedom of speech and therefore patriotism and therefore, you know, what it means to be an American and everything else. And, you know, and I'm very aware that that is a, you know, that is a slippery, dangerous slope to be on, I think.
Yeah. And you bring up a very good point. I mean, you say that at the beginning of that, you mentioned that American radio is so regulated, and we've got the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, who sets these rules, not just on what you can or cannot say, but there used to be something, I'm sure still is a thing, but when I was in radio, payola, plugola, not being able to receive goods in trade for, you know, plugging it on the air. And just, there are so many rules and regulations that go into what can be broadcast. And so I guess the question is, you know, when you talk about organizations that I think you said, what was Adam Curry's organization, Podcast Index?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so who becomes the arbiter? I guess that's the question I'm digging at. Who becomes the arbiter of what can and cannot be said, what should or should not be said? Or in this world, I mean, do we even talk about having, or do we even have that conversation about, I hate using the word, but censoring information that somebody may or may not agree with, and who is the panel that says, I don't agree with that, or I agree with that?
Well, and that's one of the difficult questions, isn't it? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, a individual company, so whether that's Apple Podcasts, whether that's Spotify, whether that's, you know, whoever, an individual company can do whatever they like. Right. There is no freedom of speech when it comes to, are you in the Apple Podcasts directory or not? Are you on Twitter or not? That, you know, that isn't a matter of, you know, certainly from a legal point of view, freedom of speech. So you've got that as a sort of side part. But I think also there is a social responsibility that many of these companies have when it comes to some of the content which is available, which is harmful to people. So I'm not talking about, you know, Biden versus Trump. I've got my own views on that, as most sensible people do. but see if you can guess what they are. I'm specifically not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, obvious things like, you know, should you inject bleach into yourself? You know, it's those obvious things where that isn't a freedom of speech issue. That is a danger to other human beings issue. And the conversation, you know, goes on around, science versus hunches, you know, as well. So, you know, is the climate change happening? Well, yes, of course there is. You know, we should be past the conversation around whether or not climate change is happening. We should be past the conversation around, did the Holocaust happen? All that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, there is a, you know, there are obvious things there, but it's a very difficult, it's a very difficult point of view to end up, you know, getting into. And I think this is what some of the replacements to Twitter, and I use replacements in inverted commas, but some of the replacements of Twitter have discovered. Parler, of course, was one of those. I think there's Getter as well, which is doing the rounds at the moment. They've discovered that they have real problems with so-called freedom of speech, because freedom of speech, if they truly believe in freedom of speech, then that means that literally anything is on their platform.
Yeah.
And that's not what people, people want. Right. That's not even what someone who is joining a platform because they want to say, you know, all kinds of things about politics. All of a sudden, if they're given, you know, incredibly objectionable images, which I understand that Getter has been full of recently, well, that's freedom of speech. Other people other people are claiming their right to post all kinds of unpleasant images that will offend most people. But, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, where do you draw that line? But there is always a line that needs to be drawn somewhere. So it ends up just being, you know, it ends up being hard. I think, you know, there is a difference in the directories and the services that your mum might use in comparison to the directories and the services that someone who is looking for alternative views might use. And perhaps that's where we draw that line of working out, you know, is Apple Podcasts a podcast directory for your mum? And if it is, should, you know, X, Y, or Z be on there? And the answer is probably no. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's hard. Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And it's obviously a conversation we've been having for a very long time. Mm. And I think it's only getting more complicated as it goes. And I don't know.
On the other side, you've got the whole North America versus everywhere else thing, or rather the whole US versus everywhere else thing. So, for example, in Thailand, I would not be able to say bad things about the Thai king.
Right.
And it's not just a matter of law where you can't defame the king. It's also a matter of upsetting Thais who believe very strongly that their king is a wonderful person. Now, the rest of the world, well, where do the laws come from? You know, should I be able to? I'm sitting here in Australia. I'm a Brit. I'm talking on a US podcast. Should I be able to talk about the Thai king in a denigratory fashion or not? And who, you know, do we essentially give the keys to all of the world's culture to someone like Apple or indeed to Americans who have different culture to the rest of us, you know, and so again, you end up with these issues of individual laws, individual countries, cultures, and where you go. So it's a really hard thing, and I think this is what a lot of large companies have discovered. Is, you know, Anchor, for example, the big podcast host.
Yeah.
They changed their terms and conditions a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, oh yes, what have they changed their terms and conditions to? Well, they've changed them because there's a new law in India around content and around grievances around content, is the way that they call it, and they have to have a specific Indian office which is there for Indians that wish to complain about content that they've heard. So, you know, Anchor have now had to put that in place because they're a global organization. And it's those sorts of things, I think, again, that are going to come and you know, that just makes life a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Do you foresee more of that happening? Do you see Spotify or Apple Podcasts or insert any other company that releases podcasts? Do you see them being held liable for content in other countries where it can be defamatory toward, you know, somebody of importance, or it could essentially break a local law? I mean, we've seen instances of that, I think, to a certain degree with Facebook. And obviously that is the biggest social network that we on the face of this earth. And I know for a long time, Facebook was trying to get into China and what they were trying to do or trying to cut back on to fall within those regulations. So I'm just curious if these companies are ever held liable or make changes to content in another country to appease another country of origin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so that's been going on for a while. So when you have a look at Apple Podcasts in China, for example, then it doesn't contain many of the podcasts that you or I would know.
Right, right.
Because you are whitelisted to go into Apple Podcasts in China, allow listed, I should say. You know, that's the particular rules that Apple have put into place with the Chinese government to allow them to exist in that particular country. Similarly, there are also, you know, rather more boring and prosaic rules around copyright, around rights to particular pieces of content, which means that there are certain shows which aren't available in some countries, which are available in others. I mean, it always used to be the case. It isn't the case anymore, but it always used to be the case that if you had marked your podcast as being explicit, then your podcast wouldn't be available in a number of different countries, including India. And given that India is the second largest English-speaking country in the world, you probably don't want to do that. So, that's rather less the case now. I gather that the default is that explicit content is available, but it's very much highlighted as being, are you sure you want to listen to explicit content? You know, and so, you know, you've got that sort of side of it as well. But I think, you know, we come at this and you know, and it's an issue that the music industry has had to face as well. It's an issue that other people have had to face. We come at this with looking at the world, looking at all of our different rules and laws, and working out, well, what do we do in these particular instances? And the truth is that actually quite a lot of what we do is legal in quite a lot of countries, but that doesn't necessarily seem to end up mattering. But we still need to be, I think, aware. And what concerns me, I guess, as someone who is a Brit who lives in Australia these days, is that what I don't want to be I don't want to be in a world where American cultural norms are imposed on the rest of us, you know. So we have, you know, I mentioned about Australian radio being quite free in terms of the type of language that you used. And, you know, and Australian English, you know, the language that people speak here, is again rather more free in terms of the types of words that are used, and it is in no way near a, you know, as much of an offence than it is in the US than it is in the UK, you know. So I think but what happens when Apple Podcasts comes along and says, oh, well, you know, that person said the C word, and that's a dreadful word, and that should never be allowed. And you know, most Australians use it every single day.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating area, and it's an area which is really hard to work out what the correct plan is. We obviously have an understanding in most countries that people like Facebook and Spotify aren't publishers, and that they are common carriers. So that allows people like Facebook and Spotify, and indeed my own website and yours, to publish stuff and not to get it approved by anybody. And that allows the internet to basically exist. So if we were to turn around and change those rules and make Facebook and Twitter a publisher, and indeed Apple Podcasts a publisher, then that would be an incredibly chilling development for the open internet. So again, we just have to be careful here, but it's not an easy conversation to have, and it's not an easy plan to actually end up fixing. I say, you know, I mean, one thing that really surprised me when I moved from the UK to Australia is in the UK, and this comes back to radio again.
Yeah.
But in the UK, you're not allowed to have a political view on the radio. Well, you are, but you have to have it balanced.
Right.
You have to have a balanced view on virtually everything that you are covering. You know, the broadcast system is a publicly owned system. It's there for the public. Therefore, you know, it shouldn't be there to further particular points of view. It should be there to help people understand what point of view that they want to end up going. So typically, if you're going to have a conversation with someone who thinks that climate change is a load of rubbish, then you would follow that up with a conversation with someone who believes in the science of climate change. And that would be how you achieve balance on broadcasting. Yeah. And now you then move to Australia. There's no such rules. And I remember having a listen to a guy who was, you know, one of the angry shock jocks who was, you know, railing against somebody for believing in this climate change nonsense and blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting because you've dug yourself quite deeply here. How are you going to do the balance stuff? And he just went into a commercial break. And I thought, whoa, this is a different country. They do things differently here. Again, I think it's just different ways of thinking about things, which I think I've been particularly aware of having moved from one culture to a different culture.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I am curious, and this is completely off topic from what we're talking about. So you've been in Australia for 5 years, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
So at what point do Brits lose their British accent and turn into an Australian accent? Or once you have a British accent, it sticks with you forever? I'm curious.
I think once you have an accent, it sticks with you forever, really.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I don't think, I think after 45 years of being a Brit, probably another 45 years, and then maybe I'll start losing the accent, but also maybe I'll start losing my teeth. So that'll be a thing.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, you had said something to me prior, talking about being creative. You had said, get rid of your non-creative things from your life if you're a creative person. Mm. I'm curious, how important is that to you in your day-to-day life? And I want to talk more about that momentarily, but I'm just curious from a creativity standpoint, how that really resonates with you.
Yeah, I think this is a... It's something that I only realized was the way that I live my life when I was starting up the Pod News newsletter, which I write. Yeah. It's something that I only became aware of, but I then look back at other things that I have done, you know, throughout my career and realize that essentially my entire job has been trying to get rid of the non-creative stuff, of the box filling, of the, you know, pressing buttons for the sake of pressing buttons, and actually try and get rid of as much of that as possible in order to free myself up to do things that I find more fun and more creatively engaging. So, you know, one example, only yesterday, I was reading something where Tom Webster from Edison Research was talking about how important YouTube is to podcasters and why most podcasters really ought to be on YouTube as well, because it's a very big search engine and it's a good way for people to find your content and blah, blah, blah. So I thought, well, okay, I don't think it'll really move the needle, but I suppose I should be there. But the one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to create additional content for YouTube. Right. I'm not going to do the boring, uncreative job of grabbing some, you know, of going to, I don't know, Headliner and uploading some audio and downloading some video and then going to YouTube and uploading the video and typing in, you know, I've got no interest in doing any of that. I wonder if I can automate it. And so I spent much of yesterday, well, I spent an hour or so of yesterday working out the arcane terminal commands that I needed to work out to completely automate that. So now every single day when I make the daily podcast that I do, that podcast will now automatically get produced as a video and uploaded into YouTube with all of the correct information. And that's a really good example, I think, of taking away as much of this drudgery as you possibly can do to basically free what you free yourself to do content and creative work. So it's a big deal for me, I think.
Yeah, I did. What you've just said so resonates with me. I obviously, we're not doing video here. That's an added component that I've never really wanted to get into. I guess I feel like I'm a podcast purist, which sounds so elitist and stupid saying it out loud, but I hate working with video. And so I have uploaded audio to YouTube before. And I think, I don't know, just add that added component for me, it seems like so much extra work. So when you actually upload your content to YouTube, what video do you use to go on top of the audio?
So all I'm doing is I'm putting the episode image on.
Okay,
that
makes sense.
I'm not actually doing any moving video at all. And quite a few people are saying, "Ah, yes, but the algorithm will downgrade you." Really, I'm there for the search results, and the search results will still find. You know, you'll still be able to find my podcast, and you'll still be able to find some of the terms that I use in that. So I'm not too concerned about that. But it's entirely free and entirely automated. So, and that's the point, you know, focus on things. So, you know, when I started writing the Pod News newsletter, the reason why it comes out at the time it does is because of my workflow. And the reason why it is put together in the format that it is, where it's mostly links to other places, is because of my workflow. And basically everything was set. It's a tremendous luxury to be able to look at a product and go, how can I build this specifically to be as easy as possible to put together? And that's a great luxury that not very many people have. So it was great to be able to end up doing that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I do have to say, I mean, it comes out at a perfect time for me. I wake up, I get my morning reading and workout done, and it's right in my inbox. So the timing works out perfectly. I know you wrote it for me, but no, it's a fantastic newsletter, and it's a great way to start the day.
Oh, well, thank you. No, it's great fun to do. And it turns out that that's 9 o'clock at night, Australian time. So it's the perfect time for me to finish it, because sometimes I've been doing other things during the day. So, so it works very well.
That's perfect. Well, I have to, I mean, obviously being so well connected to the podcasting industry, and I think you mentioned this previously about what some of your greatest challenges are. Obviously your inbox is probably just destroyed every single day with people sending you product launches and all sorts of new podcasting information. I mean, that has to be a blessing and a curse, because you get to stay informed about all of the new trends within podcasting, but it has to be so hard to manage.
Yeah. Email is something that I've always struggled with, and I've struggled with it for the last 20 years. I did end up getting a workflow which worked for me for 3 days. I was delighted by it using Google Tasks. But basically, if you miss one day, then you're just back to, you know, dealing with the fire hose of email. So email doesn't necessarily work particularly well for me, but everything else, you know, in terms of RSS feeds, in terms of everything else, you know, that's relatively easy. I've found and used for many years now an RSS reader called InnoReader. And InnoReader is, you know, really good at being able to plug in both lots of different RSS feeds, but also, you know, being able to say, tell me when this page changes. And this page doesn't have an RSS feed, but can you work one out for me? And all that kind of stuff. So that has worked particularly well for me. And that's very much part of the plan that I end up using. But I think, you know, I'm very lucky in that I'm a coder. I'm someone who podcasts every single day anyway. And so therefore, hopefully I understand this space a bit more than someone who is just a journalist who's just coming in and covering this, you know, as part of their beat. So so I'm quite lucky in that regard.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. And before we start to wrap up, I am curious, because you do have your finger on the pulse of the industry. I mean, when we first spoke, I think I'd mentioned it had been likened to me in the past as the Wild Wild West, which I think we're probably, and I think you pointed out, we're probably a little bit past that. And so with everything that we discussed in regard to the types of content and the types of regulation that does or does not exist out there already, where do you see the industry going, and what sort of trends are you starting to see picking up? Because I can't tell you, I mean, I can't imagine what you're told every single day, but I feel like I'm getting a new invite to a different podcast service every other day myself. And so there has to be at some point in time, things have to be standardized to a certain extent to continue growing. It's mind-blowing to me how fast it's growing.
It is, you know, and it's growing. I think what's exciting about it is that it isn't growing, it isn't doing a hockey stick.
Right.
you know, it's not got that tremendous growth. And some people criticize podcasting for that. I think that's a fantastic thing because I look at the slow and steady growth that we've had every year since 2012.
Yeah.
And from my point of view, you know, that is the perfect sort of growth that you want. You don't want growth which is here one day and then goes the next. You want slow and steady growth where, you know, habit, you know, we were talking earlier about habit being part of the reason why radio is still so successful. We want habit to be part of why podcasting is so successful as well. You know, that's a huge part of the success of any platform.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, podcasting will continue to grow. I suspect it'll grow in very different ways. We're seeing a lot of large companies getting involved. Many companies want it to be, you know, under their particular, you know, their particular control. So you've got Mark Cuban jumping in and,
yes,
you know, wanting to do various things and slagging off podcasting 1.0, as he calls it, and wanting to do other things with that. Well, you know, fine, go ahead and do that. But, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that that's how podcasting is going to work in the future. I think it's still going to be a very open medium. And that's what makes podcasting, you know, as exciting as it's been for many years. So, yeah, you know, that certainly, I think, part of the future. And I think the other, you know, the other part of the future is that I think we will see more interesting things going on with the technology around podcasting. We've been, yeah, in a place now where for the last 15 years, Apple has basically been our benevolent dictator. They've been sat on their hands. They've not really invested an awful lot into the medium because, well, why do they need to? And I think now we're beginning to see a bunch of new ideas and new, you know, a new format beginning to come out. One of the things that's exciting me an awful lot at the moment is the idea of being able to pay your favorite podcaster with cryptocurrency,
yeah,
and being able to send from your podcast app to straight to the creator a little message and a little tip of some, you know, Bitcoin or whatever it might be. And those, they're called boostergrams. And those things are a tremendous change to podcasting because we've been in a place for the last 15 years where we put out a podcast and we don't hear anything back. And the only thing that we have to rely on is download numbers.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden we put out a podcast and I get, you know, a message back within the hour of putting out a new podcast saying, oh, I really like the story about such and such. You know, straight back into my podcast app. And that's very exciting. And I think that the more of that happens, then the better it'll be. And of course, it means that we'll have less advertising and more other ways of earning revenue for your creative endeavor. And that's always a good thing too.
Yes, absolutely. I like that direction because coming from a marketing background and wanting to understand my audience, you know, whatever size that may be, has always been, it's been a frustration that's seemingly so difficult to do in this space. And I like that people are starting to, pinpoint ideas or solutions for that. So you can interact with them a little bit more than, you know, commenting on Twitter or leaving a review on Apple, which I think is always, you know, people's number one ask. So I like seeing those new and innovative tools and solutions coming out.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, there's, yeah, a bunch of these things coming out and most of them will fail. Some of them will work, yeah, really well. And that's what's exciting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, James, I can't thank you enough for spending an hour with me. This has been such an incredible conversation. Before we go, I do like to ask my guests a few closing questions. Mm. And the first of which is I always want to be as big of a resource for you as I possibly can. I mean, you've been a tremendous resource for me having this conversation with me. So I always like to ask, if you were looking for a resource to continue your personal growth, whether that's new subscribers to your newsletter or anything else, what resources are you looking for to continue growing?
Well, there's a question. I think it's been interesting being in the newsletter industry, which I guess I am, of finding other people who put newsletters together. And I think that that's probably the same issue that you have in podcasting, in that it's a solitary experience. And so therefore, meeting other people who do the same job as you do is quite difficult. And I think one of the problems that we've got as an industry is that there are an awful lot of places where you can talk about podcasts or about newsletters, which are aimed at the beginner. Yeah. So it's people saying, you know, what kind of microphone should I use? You know, should I host with Anchor? Should I host with Libsyn? It's those sorts of conversations. But what you don't necessarily get is a way of talking with your peers. So I've been podcasting now for 3.5 years or for 15 years, depending on your definition of what podcasting is. It would be really nice to be able to talk to people who have my level of understanding and my level of knowledge. And the same goes for newsletters as well. There are loads of people that think that they're in the newsletter industry, but they've got a MailChimp and they've got, you know, 100 people who get their newsletter every week. Yeah. That's not a kind of the game that I'm playing here. So it'd be really nice. So the long-winded answer to a very simple question is it would be really interesting to be in, to find some communities of common interest and of common experience. And that's something which I think, you know, the internet lacks in a variety of different ways.
Yeah. That makes total sense. The next question for you, I always like to know, and I'm interested to talk briefly about this. If you could name one book that has just had a profound impact on your life, what would that book be?
Yes, I can. And I'm busy. Can you hear me Googling? Can you hear me Googling it so that I make sure that I call the author out correctly? There you go. Click on that button, then I'll be able to actually tell you. So the book is a wonderful book. It's written by a Canadian businessman called Paul Jarvis, and the book is called Company of One. The full title is Company of One: Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing for Business. And I remember reading this. I had finished working at the BBC, which is a broadcaster with 23,000 people who work there. I'd worked with a variety of other large organizations. And I remember reading this when it came out in 2020 and thinking, this is everything I believe in and more. It's basically, you know, loads of different hints and tips of running a business, which is essentially a business where you are employing one person, and that is you. And there's a bunch of really useful and interesting tools. One of the tips, by the way, if you are running a business which is just you, is make up a different name for the person that sends out your invoices. That's what I've been doing. Somebody called Robin sends out my invoices, who's completely imaginary. But the good thing is that Robin, whether it's a boy Robin or a girl Robin, I don't know. But Robin is the person that sends out invoices to my clients and says, you know, you haven't paid yet. You know, it'd be really good if you could pay now, please. You know, and has those tedious and non-creative arguments with my clients. And the only time when a client hears from me is when I'm helping them with things. So that's a tremendous, as a British person, I'm always very embarrassed about asking for money and all of that kind of stuff. So it's a wonderful foil to basically move all of that. It's still me doing it, obviously, but it's a wonderful foil of moving that off to a different personality so that the only time somebody hears from me is a creative way rather than, you know, why haven't you paid your invoice yet, you useless company.
That is a phenomenal idea. And I will say, when you first told me about this book, I Googled it, and that piece of advice, not the name on the invoice thing, but the staying small being the next big thing for business, that piece of advice is the best business advice I ever received. I always thought that I wanted to run this big company, but when I realized that just wasn't the truth, and when I realized it was okay to stay small, to stay a solopreneur, that was the most empowering thing that I had ever experienced. And I'm so glad I was turned on to that early in my entrepreneurial journey. I'm so thankful for that.
Absolutely. It's okay to be small.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then last but not least, James, if you could leave the audience with one call to action that you either live your life by or you implore others to live their lives by, what would that be?
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of this has been in the conversations that we've already had today, but it's making sure that you focus on things that give you joy and things that matter, and try and get rid of as much of the drudgery and the non-creative stuff from your life as you possibly can.
Yes, I love that. That's perfect. James, thank you so much for doing this. If people would like to connect with you, if they'd like to sign up for the newsletter, what is the best way for people to find you on the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is at podnews.net, which is a daily newsletter and indeed podcast about the industry of podcasting. If the earlier conversations that we were having about radio is a vague interest, then I also have a newsletter about radio too. Who knew? And you can get that at james.crid.land. James.crid.land. And you may notice that website looks vaguely familiar to the PodNews website because it's running on exactly the same code under the hood. So any of those, or you'll find me personally on Twitter at James Cridland.
Perfect. James, thank you again for this. Thank you for the content you produce. Like I said, it's a nice way to start my day. It's concise, it's informative, and I love reading it every single day. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate everything that you're creating.
Well, Trey, thank you so much, and it's been great speaking to you for the last hour.
One more time, I would like to extend a huge thank you to James, not just for simply joining me on the podcast, but again, for his kindness, his professionalism, and all that he's doing for the podcasting community. Podcasters and podcast fans alike, I would highly encourage you to sign up for James's newsletter at podnews.net. You can find all of the relevant links from this particular episode in the show notes at themosaiclifepodcast.com. And while you're online, if you would like more Mosaic Life podcast content in your life, you can follow me on Instagram at Trey Kaufman. That's TreyKaufman. That's the best place to connect with me, to talk about the podcast, to stay up to date about podcast happenings and guest announcements. And it's just a good place to say hi. And of course, none of this would be possible without you. I truly appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast. It means the world to me. And again, I take none of this for granted. Thank you so incredibly much. And until next time, take care, do better, and be well.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.